From ransomware attacks to supply chain compromises, the Cyber Talks podcast will dive into the world of the latest cyber threats and attacks impacting businesses globally. Join us as we speak with industry leaders and practitioners about the cyber risks impacting their businesses and how they're addressing these challenges. Cyber Talks is presented by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. To learn how eSentire can help your team reduce your cyber risks and build a more resilient security operation, visit eSentire.com. I'm one of your hosts, Eldon Spikeroff, founder of eSentire. Welcome to Cyber Talks. I'm your host, Eldon Spikeroff, founder of eSentire, and today I'm speaking with Ryan Westman, the Director of Threat Intelligence at eSentire. In this conversation, we'll get into the dynamic between private equity firms and their portfolio companies when it comes to cybersecurity, why adversaries target PE portfolio companies, and the unique challenges that private equity firms are up against. So let's get started. I'm really excited to speak with you today, Ryan. Can you tell us a bit about the Threat Response Unit and your role within it?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Eldon. So like you mentioned, my name is Ryan Westman. Currently, I am the Director of Threat Intelligence as part of the Threat Response Unit over at eSentire. So I've been with eSentire now for over 2 years, leading the Threat Intelligence team as part of the Threat Response Unit. Prior to that, I spent 3 years in Big Four consulting. And prior to that, I was a member of Canada's Federal Public Service for over 5 years. So I was employed by Public Safety Canada. And for those in the States, the comparable agency would be the Department of Homeland Security, as well as the Canadian Armed Forces. So I hold 2 master's degrees. I'm also a GX certified threat intelligence analyst and forensic analyst. Getting back to the team. So the threat response unit is made up of 2 teams, the threat intelligence team and the tactical threat response team, which is our detection engineering team. So at a high level, our objective is to provide better security outcomes to our clients every day while combating cyber threats on our customers' behalf. And each of our teams supports one another in that objective on a daily basis. So starting with the threat intelligence team, we provide immediate awareness of new and emerging threats in the wild in order to validate our detection capabilities. So if the threat intelligence team identifies a gap in our detection library, we work with the tactical threat response team to close that gap, who are concurrently and continuously evolving our detection library in order to keep pace with the bad guys. So the unit itself is made up of over 30 security professionals, and that includes data scientists, security researchers, malware reverse engineers, and threat intelligence analysts with numerous certifications and decades of experience in the industry. And so just to wrap it up, for those who I may have lost, at a high level, our objective is to provide better security outcomes to our clients every day. And each of our teams supports one another in that objective on a daily basis.
Excellent. Very thorough. So let's dive into the main topic for today, which is the threat research that your team has shared about the private equity threat landscape. This is a particularly interesting topic for me because when eSentire first began operations, we really focused on our MDR offering on the mid-market, buy-side, alternative finance, and sell-side private equity space. And that's where the company really first began. And over time, we've continued to work with a lot of big private equity firms. So to kick things off, why do you think this sector is becoming increasingly interesting to cyber criminals?
Yeah, no, that's really a great question. I mean, the only thing I would say is I think that they've always been interested in this sector specifically because of the ease with which you can monetize the data. But to be a little bit more specific, PE firms have detailed disclosure requirements to abide by, making it easy for attackers to find these valuable targets. So they have a lot of sensitive data on their investments. And what's more is that they have a wide network of portfolio companies, each of which is actually an entry point for threat actors. So really, breaching one entity can potentially provide access to the entire network, so a supply chain attack. Plus, these portcos, as some of the cool kids like to say, are growth-focused and often secured with lean, less mature cyber operations. And this means sophisticated attackers will often perform complex reconnaissance on firms and their portcos to obtain poorly secured firm documents and harvest key employee credentials. They understand operational details, the names of key employees, and once they're embedded, they can hijack relationships, intercept emails, and even initiate wire transfers to steal millions of dollars. There's actually one that just came up today where someone received a it's around deepfakes actually, which is quite interesting. So someone in a financial firm accepted an invite and a Zoom call, and they were convinced to send $25 million to someone who was using deepfake technology.
Yeah, I saw that. Very, very interesting, right? A sort of an AI spin to an older technique.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll say that, you know, I think a lot of CIOs at most PE firms, they're challenged with a sort of a lack of visibility into the portfolio companies, as well as a certain amount of control that they lack over the security tools and the technology that their portfolio companies choose. And I say the other thing is PE firms, they almost always invest over more than one specific industry. So each with their own set of risks and vulnerabilities. And I imagine this makes it easier for cyber criminals to target the weakest link of the chain. And I think the most unfortunate thing to consider, especially for portfolio companies, is that breaches can and will impact deal execution, deal value, integration, and they can certainly put reputations and future deals at risk.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point to bring up. And so, Eldon, that kind of makes me curious. So from what you've seen and all of your experience, and that's, part of where our company was born in the PE industry and supporting the PE industry, what are some of the most common misconceptions that firms have about their cybersecurity posture from your perspective?
So I think depending on the size and capability maturity of the firm, there may be several. For one, if they haven't experienced a breach, the firms might believe that the more traditional security measures they have in place, like old school antivirus and firewalls, are sufficient because they're underestimating the sophistication and persistence of cyber attackers. The reality today is that the landscape, that the threat landscape requires a multi-layered defense strategy, which includes endpoints, detection, behavioral analytics, and proactive threat hunting. I think, plus there might be a misconception that cyber criminals only target large tier one banks or retail consumer data. But, I think as you mentioned, the strategic information held by a lot of PE firms is highly valuable to criminals for their intellectual property and trade secrets as well. And, smaller PE firms might assume that they're not targets due to their size or relative size, but, not realizing that they may be seen as having lower defenses as compared to larger firms, and then as such, easier targets. I think finally, another big misconception is that complying with regulatory requirements is often confused with having a strong cybersecurity posture. And I think that we can agree that compliance does not guarantee security. It's just sort of a baseline. Now, let's get into the threat research from the Threat Response Unit. One thing I noted was the overall intrusion ratio for PE firms, as well as the ransomware intrusion ratio. Can you explain the trend you've seen for the intrusion ratios and what factors contribute to this trend?
So let me start off by explaining briefly what intrusion ratio is. So we're measuring what percentage of incidents proceed past initial access to the intrusion phase, meaning it's the relationship between intrusion attempts against an organization and the initial access that actually takes place, or for those of you who like NIST terms, basically it's the difference between an event and incidents. So in this case, we actually saw that financial organizations are the 10th most likely in the last year to have had incidents proceed to the hands-on intrusion phase, and 7th when considering ransomware-associated threats. And so this is due largely to attacks via valid credentials and remote exploitation of vulnerabilities. I do also want to call out, though, that within the financial sector as a whole, private equity organizations were one of the least at-risk sub-industries with intrusion rates approaching almost zero compared to their cohorts. For those asking or questioning why that would be the case, I think there's a few things, but to start us off, they're more heavily regulated relative to other industries when it comes to cyber. So when I think of this, I think of PCI compliance and other auditing measures Even though that doesn't necessarily mean that they are secure, it does mean that there is a baseline, as you said. And then going back to something I said earlier as well, too, data historically has been easily monetized when breaching these firms. So there's been more of an incentive historically to address the challenge of cybersecurity from both a financial, largely from a financial perspective.
That's really interesting. If we're to dive into the specifics a bit here, in what ways have you seen the tactics of attackers change in the last year?
Yeah, so our research shows that threat actors, for the most part, relied on using email-based and browser-based tactics, as well as a tactic known as search engine optimization poisoning. So getting into specifics, so we saw the presence of CACBOT and Emotet, which are both email-based malware, appear in private equity organizations. So these malware are downloaded and executed by users from malicious email attachments. Private equity also encountered a larger degree of SOC ghoulish. So that's a browser-based malware leveraging fake browser updates to trick employees into downloading and executing the payload when visiting trusted sites. So an example or a more traditional term would be a watering hole attack. So we also noted the presence of Gootloader and SwarmWorker, which employs the search engine optimization poisoning tactics that I mentioned earlier, or SEO poisoning. And that's where threat actors intercept employees searching for legal forms or how-to documents, templates, and tax documents. So what the threat actors use the search engine optimization poisoning technique to do is to ensure that their malicious pages are among the top results in search engines like Google and Bing. So I'll also add too that SOC Ghoulish is consistently associated with ransomware activity, while SolarMarker acts as an info stealer that exfiltrates data directly from the endpoint. That includes browser history, passwords, cookies, and fingerprint telemetry from the user's endpoint. And then, as I mentioned earlier, this information can then be sold on the dark web and leveraged for further operations against an organization, often by utilizing the credentials to gain further access.
Now, you specifically mentioned Emotet and CACBOT, which rely on business email compromise. Can you share how they impact their targets?
So the threats can lead to network-wide ransomware attacks in which a actual hands-on keyboard operator can deploy an intrusion tool like Cobalt Strike in as little as 10 minutes after gaining that initial access into the environment. Really, what Cobalt Strike enables intruders to do is to traverse the network laterally to other hosts, including critical hosts or crown jewels such as domain controllers and active directories. And for those of you who are looking for a little bit of a refresher on red teaming methodology or pen testing, the reason why they're targeting those specific servers is because they're looking for the credentials that they can then use to move throughout the organization. So once they're in that position, they can steal that data as well too, and deploy ransomware to as many hosts as possible. So fortunately, if the firm has moderately hardened cyber defenses, such as a company-wide policy with email filtering or anti-malware and endpoint mitigations, as well as endpoint mitigations, those email-borne attacks are less likely to succeed or at least reduce the risk of them getting to that dreaded state of ransomware. So even if that malicious code successfully gets through, users will still need to be convinced to perform an action to execute it. And so that being said, soft targets can be compromised easily, and adversaries can use tactics like business email compromise attacks or email thread hijacking to bypass those reputation filters.
Can you expand on what you mean specifically by email thread hijacking?
Email thread hijacking basically allows threat actors to take over older email threads, sometimes from business partners, manipulating recipients into believing the email is legitimate and safe to open. Plus, to bypass email filtering policies set in place, these malware strains often wrap a malicious LNK or ISO file in a password protected zip file as well.
So we know that email-based attacks have been used by hackers for years. But SEO poisoning is a specific interesting tactic that we've seen take off in the past couple of years, and not just in the financial industry, but in legal as well. So what would you say are the best practices for private equity firms to enhance their user awareness and prevent such attacks going forward?
To be honest, email, browser, or search engine optimization poisoning, all these threats are somewhat reliant and depend on user execution or a level of social engineering, which means that user awareness and user awareness training plays a really large role in preventing these attacks. One great quote that I really like is that, people are the initial access vector. So by helping train them to be more aware of these kinds of threats is going to help reduce risk in a lot of ways for a lot of organizations. But to be a little bit more specific, you should be up to date with the threat landscape and expose users to the latest email campaigns and search engine optimization poisoning campaigns so that they can learn to identify and report social engineering attacks. In addition, you should have a reporting process in place that encourages employees to report successful user execution incidents. And you really shouldn't be punishing employees for being socially engineered. It can happen to anyone. And then the final point that I recommend, not just for these specific types of attacks, but workstations in the modern threat landscape, all workstations should have some kind of endpoint monitoring solution to ensure there are some technical controls in place to supplement that user awareness piece.
I like to, call excellent user awareness training skepticism inoculation. And, I like what you said about not blaming people completely because, email has been around for 40 plus years. People's jobs rely on opening attachments. The HTTP has been around for over 30 years. People have been clicking on, click on links as part of their job. It's important that you put amount of tech in place that can help defend the environment as well as, again, that continuous skepticism inoculation. So, earlier when we talked about intrusion ratios, you mentioned that some threat actors are using valid credentials and remote exploitation to target firms. How would you recommend firms counteract these tactics?
So remote exploitation prevention really requires a constant awareness of inventory as well as a regular patch cadence and a process for quickly actioning active exploitation campaigns. In addition, one of the other things that I would strongly encourage firms is to consider dark web monitoring solutions. So being able to actually look outside of your environment. So the hypothetical here is if you're working on a personal laptop and that's outside of your scope of monitoring and the person who's at home logging into a Microsoft 365 through their personal laptop, in a hypothetical situation, that endpoint could theoretically have some kind of information stealing malware. And that individual who has that piece of malware installed on that endpoint outside of the scope of monitoring, that individual will take that data and try to sell it on the dark web. And so what you can do is you can create collection plans to specifically look for your domain. So your emails associated with your corporate environment. So that's one of the things that I would consider organizations consider. But I would also, pay attention to advisories that are released by our organization, eCentire, and the news at large. Really what my team's job is to do is to provide you the awareness and knowledge you need in order to separate the wheat from the chaff, because our information environment is very polluted. There's a lot of people telling you a lot of things about a lot of things that may or may not be real risks or vulnerabilities or threats to you and your organization. So being aware and knowledgeable of what's actually a threat to your organization is a big thing. And look for things that overlap with your technology footprint when you're reading these. You should also have a process in place to action patching and mitigations when patching is not immediately available for those higher critical vulnerabilities. And then also pay attention to managed software. So don't just trust that your MSSP will always keep your SSL VPNs, file transfer, and remote management software up to date if that's in the scope of their responsibilities.
Very good. I've noticed myself that there's been more of a focus on core software vulnerabilities and the software bill of materials in the last year or two. Okay, so Ryan, as we wrap up today's discussion, what are your thoughts regarding our approach of cybersecurity and private equity, how it has evolved over the last few years? And what do you think are the next big challenges that firms need to prepare for?
Yeah, so I think I'll start off by giving some strategic thoughts and then some tactical thoughts. So, you know, going back to the user awareness training, more bluntly, humans are the weakest link when it comes to security. So having an employee education program is really essential to minimize the risk of employees clicking on phishing emails or falling for the search engine optimization poisoning Gootloader has been using and some of those other malwares that I mentioned. However, because humans are your weakest link, if you do invest in them, they can become one of your greatest defenses. So teaching folks to be wary of topical campaigns can greatly reduce organizational risk with respect to basic initial access techniques, or at the very least, you know, make them think a bit more before clicking a link. As part of that employee awareness program, you should be highlighting those common campaigns that employees in your industry are falling for. So bringing it back to earlier in our conversation around the initial access, there are a number of malware we've observed over the previous year that utilize that search engine optimization poisoning to hijack search results when employees are looking for those business forms and templates. So this tactic is highly successful, and we've seen it impacting organizations across the board. Really a practical recommendation would be to remind employees to go to official sources for legal documents or forms, as opposed to using generic search engine searches. Part of organizational resilience also depends on your ability to actually respond to a threat and or vulnerability. And that's really a key differentiator when it comes to MDR, is really the ability to not only detect the threat, but then be able to take actions to actually remediate that threat. And then having a reporting process in place that allows employees to report those phishing emails and really actively encouraging them to do so. Taking it a little bit more granular, if you're not already, you should adopt, really highlighting this point, you really should adopt an endpoint monitoring solution as it helps build that resiliency against threats that can pass through employees like search engine optimization poisoning and threats that are able to remotely exploit vulnerabilities without user action. And really, ideally, you will have visibility into all your machines in your environment, especially the servers and domain controllers. And that ideally will include visibility into the logs for VPNs, domain controllers, and endpoints in order to track those bad guys if they are successful in getting in and establishing a foothold and are able to travel laterally through your environment. By having that log monitoring, we're able to determine where the attacker started their infection and see the actions that they actually took to attempt to go through your environment, allowing us to provide better recommendations and build better detections to reduce that same attack from occurring again in the future. And finally, the last sort of tactical piece here is you should implement identity controls. So for example, token-based multi-factor authentication, you'd be surprised how many organizations still don't do that and don't do it properly. And like I mentioned as well earlier, the dark web monitoring piece that looks for credentials associated with your user base. Those are the strategic and the tactical level things that matter, I think. And I don't like to look into the crystal ball too often, because I think it bleeds into the misconception that threat intelligence is this crystal ball that can tell you what's going to happen in the future. And really, that's not what it is. It's assessment based. So if I'm to give some thoughts on the coming year, I think, and I'm not really going to say anything that hasn't really been said before, but AI, Gen AI is going to increase the speed and lower the barrier for threat actors to target environments. So I think that's the one thing to continue to pay attention to in 2024.
Great. Well, excellent. Thank you for taking the time today to speak, Ryan. I think this has been a great conversation.
Thanks, Alden.
To learn how EastEntire can help your team reduce your cyber risks and build a more resilient security operation, visit EastEntire.com.